Today we begin a series of reports from Tibet. NPR's Rob Gifford was part of a group of journalists recently who were allowed a rare visit to the mountainous region, which came under Chinese control in 1950. Tibetan exile groups claim their culture has been destroyed by a half century of what they call Chinese occupation. The Chinese government says Tibet has been part of China since the 13th century and that the region has retained its unique cultural heritage. Rob Gifford has this report on the competing claims.
Tashi Lumpo Monastery, traditional seat of Tibet's second highest monk, the Panchen Lama. One of the first visitors from British India in the 19th century called it a dazzling hill of polished gold. Tashi Lumpo is like a small town in itself, perched on a hillside overlooking the city of Shigatse, 170 miles south of the Tibetan capital Lhasa. Other temples in Tibet were badly damaged during the chaos of China's Cultural Revolution, when Chairman Mao said anything old or traditional should be destroyed. Tashi Lumpo somehow survived the worst of it and retained many of its brightly painted assembly halls and glittering gold roofs. Today is Jamya Festival. The monks say it's a celebration of the harvest, and below a huge green awning in the shadow of Tashi Lumpo, a dozen dancers in bright masks and flowing robes chant as they circle a central altar. The dancers whirl and swoop like Buddhist dervishes, and several thousand Tibetans sit below the stage enthralled by the scene. The evening sun slants across the courtyard onto the faces of the novice monks beside the stage. A more typically Tibetan scene it would seem hard to find. Few of the Tibetans in the audience who sit drinking their barley beer can speak Chinese, and the performance seems like a genuine Tibetan cultural gathering. If you didn't know the political and cultural turmoil Tibet has suffered under the Chinese over the last 50 years, it would seem to a visitor here or many other rural areas that Tibetan culture is flourishing. The next day, a press conference has been arranged with a senior monk called Punlak, who's director of the very un-Buddhist-sounding Democratic Management Committee of Tashi Lumpo. The paradoxes of a Tibetan Buddhist monastery in China are everywhere. The robed monk with the shaved head sits beneath a picture of Chairman Mao and the current Chinese president Jiang Zemin. Outside, not far away, a Chinese flag flutters alongside Tibetan prayer flags. In response to a question, Punlak confirms that all monks must take patriotic education classes, learning how to be good Chinese citizens and studying China's religious laws. With a party official watching closely over his shoulder, he says there are now only 800 monks at the monastery. Before Chinese People's Liberation Army troops arrived in Tibet in 1950, there were nearly 4,000. Spoken to privately, the monks suggest a fair degree of freedom on religious issues, as long as they don't touch on sensitive political subjects, such as the exiled Dalai Lama. It's clear that the Chinese government wants to allow, even encourage, external shows of Tibetan culture, as long as they don't reflect an internal identity that's anything but Chinese. North of Shigatse in the capital Lhasa, a group of Tibetan workmen in dirty overalls are digging up a road near the Jokhang, the holiest temple in Tibetan Buddhism. Huge stretches of traditional housing in the city center have been torn down. Most Tibetans here speak Chinese. Almost every taxi driver is Chinese. And the Chinese in Lhasa now almost outnumber the Tibetans. If it weren't for the magnificent Potala Palace, residence of generations of Dalai Lamas perched high on a hill above the city, much of Lhasa could be mistaken for any other provincial Chinese town. A group of teenagers is hanging out on a street corner. They look like kids on a street in Beijing or Shanghai, or for that matter, Bangkok or Tokyo. Floppy hair, baggy pants, and a truckload of attitude. They're Tibetan, but they speak fluent Chinese, and their musical tastes are truly international.
Jackson. Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah, Backstreet Boys.
Backstreet Boys. Yeah. Hi, Jose.
Hi, Emil.
These boys say they're proud of being Tibetan, but they admit they're not entirely sure what that means, and they confess to a less than devout commitment to Buddhism. After a brief consultation about the dangers involved, they agree to take a visiting journalist to a Tibetan nightclub. The place is full of young Tibetans drinking Budweiser beer. A man in traditional Tibetan dress sings a jaunty love song in Tibetan. The boys say these nightclubs are a local reaction to the influx of Chinese. But there's something slightly artificial about the local dress and the dances, and even the overdone decoration. Half close your eyes and you could almost be in a nightclub in Beijing. Asked what he wants from life, one boy says he wants to go to Shanghai and get a good job. He says he's not interested in politics and probably only 20% of his friends would support Tibetan independence. The boys have basically been assimilated into Chinese and international culture without even realizing it. A development that is of great concern to Tibetans in exile, and especially in Dharamsala in northern India, where the Dalai Lama fled in 1959. Tupten Sampal is the government in exile's secretary for information. He says this subtle economic and cultural assimilation is much more dangerous to Tibetan culture than the previous physical assaults by the Chinese.
In the urban centers, you know, the young Tibetans, they have no sense of direction and they've lost their inner bearing. The result of the present, you know, rapid economic development process is far more successful in separating the Tibetan people from their culture than what the Chinese authorities did during the Cultural Revolution.
The Chinese government has pledged to pour in $10 billion to Tibet in the next 5 years, improving the infrastructure and boosting the economy, it says. There's no doubt that materially Chinese rule has, in the last decade especially, brought benefits to the region. Infant mortality rates are down, life expectancy is up. There are more hospitals, more schools, more businesses, more prosperity. But the Chinese seem only to emphasize development. The Tibetans can have their quaint little dances and even a good dose of Buddhism if they want, as long as they love the motherland. The danger is that, despite undoubted economic progress taking place, Tibetan culture is, in many places, simply ending up on display, like a hollow theme park disconnected from its roots. Rob Gifford, NPR News, Lhasa, Tibet.